It's a indeed a pleasure and above all a privilege for B'nai Torah to be hosting a program that is being brought to you this evening by Torah in Motion. And all I need to say is that I'm, from its very inception, 10 or 11 years ago, I've always been a great admirer and follower of Torah in Motion, and a supporter, and a great admirer of Rabbi Kelman, who has worked so hard and been so proactive and in bringing scholars, very interesting speakers to Toronto. And I'm sure that just reading the credentials of tonight's speakers, it'll be the same tonight as well. So without saying anything further, I'd like to call on Rabbi Kelman to introduce the program.
Thank you very much for your warm words and welcome. I hope everybody had a nice Pesach, although that's ancient history by now, right? Although we're into winter already, so I don't know what if we are coming or going. Anyway, okay, it really is a pleasure to introduce a dynamic couple who really, as I mentioned last night, we had the closing dinner of the ninth cycle of our mother and daughter, our bat mitzvah program, and Pnina was our guest speaker. And they're really on the cutting edge of what's going on in Israel. Rav Ronen is the rabbi of the Ohel Ari Shul in Ranana. If you remember last year for Yom HaZikaron, the Weisses were here to speak, who unfortunately lost a son in Jenin, I believe. And the shul that he is the rav of was named for their son. A lot of English speakers there, and it's a very a happening place. And both he and his wife, are very much involved. Rav Ronen is the founding director or the founder of the Chutznikim program in Yeshivat in Petach Tikva, the Hesder program. He's very involved in Sohar, and both he and his wife are really the founding members of Beit Hillel, which I believe they are going to talk about a little bit, which is a new group dealing with issues of tolerance and extremism in Israel. Pnina really does this all on the side. She is getting her PhD in international taxation at the University of Haifa, and this is her specialty, law. But she teaches Torah, and you'll see, I think it's a lost art community. She's not involved in Torah on a full-time basis. They serve this the Shlichim to Bnei Akiva in North America about 6-7 years ago. And Pnina taught at Stern, and it's really a pleasure to have them. And what we're going to do for the format of the program is they're really going to speak interactively to each other. They don't agree on a lot of issues, like many husbands and wives, and they're going to share their views on what is the issues facing the Zionist community in Israel, the challenges, the future, the prospects, what we can do about it. Without further ado, Bakasha. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, we decided we're going to stay. In a sense, I should be very grateful. Thank you, Rabbi Kelman, for having us and for this wonderful initiation, for everyone who has gone out of their way to make this evening a success. It's interesting, Ronen, that this is an opportunity for us to be speaking one to another and not necessarily focusing on our laptops. I would like to talk, along with Ronen, about very challenging changes in Israeli society, different sectors of Israeli society. And maybe it's good to begin with a joke. I don't know, maybe you guys know this joke, but to me, I think it reflects the situation that we are now facing in Israel. This guy goes on a train, and there's an old lady sitting on that train, and there are no other available seats, so he sits next to this old lady. And after a few minutes, it's a long ride, she looks at this guy and she says to him, "You're Jewish, right?" And he says to her, "No, ma'am, I'm sorry, you must be mistaken, I'm not Jewish." So she says, okay, sorry, my fault. They continue the drive, and a few minutes later she turns to him and she says, "There's no reason why you should hide your Judaism. You're Jewish, just admit it." And he says to her, "I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm not Jewish. You are probably mistaking me for someone else." And she says, "Okay, I'm not going to burden you with this." And they continue the drive. And a few minutes later, she turns to him and she says, "You know, it's such a shame, a young boy. You should admit, you should stand up and say, I'm Jewish and be proud of it." And he says to her, "Ma'am, I'm Christian. I go to church every Sunday. My parents are not Jewish. My grandparents are not Jewish. Please, I am not Jewish." And she says to him, "I'm sorry. This is the last time I'm hassling you about this." And they continue. And about 30 minutes later, she says, "You know what? I really am so disappointed. I was just waiting for you to come and confess and admit and say you're Jewish. Embrace your Judaism. Celebrate your Judaism." He looks at his watch and he sees there's still an hour to go. So he says to her, "You know what, ma'am? You're right. I am Jewish. I am Jewish. How was I wrong to not confess and admit this to begin with?" And she says to him, "You see, isn't this a relief? I'm so happy you shared this with me." And now they continue the ride. And after a few minutes, she turns to him and she says, "You're Jewish, but you don't look Jewish." And I think this is a very interesting message to begin our discussion with, won't you say? Sometimes things are Jewish, but they don't look Jewish. Or sometimes things don't look Jewish or look Jewish, but they're not really Jewish. And when I'm referring to this, I'm saying we've just passed Pesach, Rabbi Kalman, you mentioned this. You know, it's very interesting in the Haggadah, the Ben HaRasha, right? Whatever that may be, and that by itself is a question. It's very interesting if you look into the psukim in Parashat Bo, where the Ben HaRasha is mentioned for the first time. The Torah talks about the arrival to Eretz Yisrael, and only then does the Ben HaRasha ask, "Maha avodah zot lachem?" Rav Kook is asking, what is the connection between the arrival to Eretz Yisrael and the Ben HaRasha? And Rav Kook is saying, you know what? In Eretz Yisrael, upon the establishment of the coming state, he says this before the state of Israel was established, there are going to be some educational challenges. And our Judaism will have to define that again. And what does it mean to be a Jew? And for many people, sometimes the establishment of the state of Israel was involved with denying their Judaism. And these are the challenges that we will address today. Do you agree with me on that?
So far, so good.
Good.
Okay, so with your permission, I'll stand up. There's a Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. And the Gemara speaks about six things in the future that when a person is brought to be judged, he will be asked about. Asakta b'priyahuya, did you do the mitzvah purvu? Kavat aitim la Torah, did you set time, designate time to learn Torah? And one of the things which is mentioned in the Gemara is sipita lishua. Did you long for salvation? As opposed to all the rest of the things mentioned in the Gemara, which are clear, like a person can know what to do, like learn Torah. Everyone, it's something which is measurable. Like, for instance, you can run a movie on lives of one and see how much free time did he have, and out of this free time, how much did he utilize for Torah. All the questions are easy to answer, sometimes more difficult to implement. What is Tzipita Lishua? Did you long for salvation? There's an interesting explanation, Rav Harlap. And Rav Harlap explains that Tzipita comes from the word litzpot, to observe, to see. Tzipita is not just to long, not just to wait. It's not just a passive action. Rather, it's a very active action to look, to penetrate to the inner levels, to what is behind the headlines. Something you cannot see in the newspapers, something you will not see in the headlines of the CNN, something which is happening deep inside. And this is, I believe, our obligation before Yom HaTzmaut, to do this cheshbon nefesh, to do this tzipita lishua, to try to penetrate and see what is happening behind the scenes, below the surface. And we wish to try to divide the presentation today to two parts, and afterwards, obviously, we'll open this up to questions. The first part of what you are trying to analyze, litzpot, is what is happening with the general society in Israel. The second part is what is happening within the Dati religious Zionist community in Israel. Very interesting, challenging transitions which we'll try to analyze together. So I wish, with your permission, to start with the first one, with trying to analyze what is going on today with the general society, with the secular society. There's a very interesting Zohar on Parashat Truma, and if you mentioned Pesach before, so the Zohar is asking about the transition between Pesach and Shavuot. It says the Zohar the following. On Pesach, we had a fight against the Chametz. Against each and every crumb of Chametz, because of the holiness of the Matzah. And then we count 50 days, we move up, step by step, level by level, and we reach a pinnacle, we reach the climax on Shavuot. And what happens on Shavuot? What was the Korban, the offering that was brought on Shavuot in the times of Bet Mikdash? Anyone remembers? Shtalechem, solet yena chametz afen, as a Korban, offering which is made of chametz, asks the Zohar, how come? How can it be? We reach a climax, and not only we do not abolish the chametz, we bring the chametz to the mizbeach, to the altar. So the Zohar brings up a mashal. It's a mashal, it's a parable to a child that got ill. And during his illness, the doctors told his father, don't give him any snacks, any junk food, only healthy food. And this is what he did for a while. And then when the child, his son, got recovered, then the doctors told his father, now you can give him whatever you wish, and he will not be harmed because he's well now. Says the Zohar, this is exactly the process that Am Yisrael went through when leaving Egypt. At the beginning, we were in a very low spiritual level, still affected by the negative influence of the Egyptians. The only way to start from scratch was to leave all the chametz, with everything the chametz symbolizes, the world of mundane, the nature, the secular world, leave it aside and stick to the matzah, the holiness. That's the first stage. But then, when we count and we move up and we uplift ourselves level by level, step by step, when we reach the pinnacle, the climax, then we can take even the chametz. We are not afraid of the chametz anymore. We are able to take the chametz and sanctify the chametz. This process, which the Zohar described, which is the process of Sfirat HaOmer, is a fundamental process, spiritual process in Judaism. By the way, that's how we start the week. We start the week with Havdalah. We are separating. We do Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat. And we are finishing the week with sanctifying Kiddush. The definition in the Zohar, the term in the Zohar for that process is Shari beferuda v'sayim b'chibura. We begin with separation. We conclude with integration. In a sense, this process, this pattern, which applies to many things in life, is also what I believe we see today in the state of Israel with regard to the general society. I had the zchut in the past 8 years in my shul, through Tzohar, other frameworks, to deal a lot with the general society. Outreach programs, building bridges, conversations, weddings, communities, many, many, many things. And there's something amazing which is happening today within the general society. But in order to understand, I wish to give the background. When the state was established, when the Jewish state was founded, after 2,000 years of escaping, it was part of our genes that we need to build shields, defense walls, to protect ourselves from the environment. That was part of our culture, part of our heritage. For 2,000 years, Jews had communities, shtetls, sometimes ghettos, places where they could have escaped. And there you go, we come to the land of Israel, we establish the state of Israel, and the people are still trying to keep the tradition, the Masoret and the Torah, still remember that we need to protect ourselves from the others, from the otherness. Who is the otherness in Israel? Who are the others? Our fellow brothers, the Chilonim, the secular people. So throughout the years, the Dati community, the religious community, started developing an amazing system of yeshivot, of Bate Knesset, of shuls. By the way, without many Rabbanei Kehilot, and this is something we'll touch upon later on. And these places, in a sense, shuls, the schools, afterwards the settlements, the yeshuvim, the Dati religious neighborhoods, became the shelter. The place where we escaped from the non-religious influence. And the gap and the divide between the different communities, between the Dati and the non-religious community, grew bigger and bigger from year to year. There are many other factors. Obviously, the religious establishment did not help to build the bridges. Bills in the Knesset of coercion of Kfiya Datit were also established, which also added to the picture. But then throughout the years of the state, the communities, the Dati and the non-religious communities, got afar from each other. There's something very interesting that is happening in the past few years and began to be much more significant maybe in the past 2 years, 3 years. After many years of divide, of even hatred, that maybe reached its pinnacle, it was obviously connected to the politics between right wing and left wing, and one of the lowest points was the assassination in the Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. The hatred, the anti-religious waves were impossible. But something happened ever since. It started with the peace process that in a sense failed with the Intifada of 2000. That was a dream, that was a religion for many Israelis. Afterwards, the disengagement, leadership crisis, lots of issues we had in Israel with Prime Minister, with the President. And at some point, the Israeli society, obviously we cannot generalize, but the Israeli society, the trend became very traditional. People started looking for tradition more than ever. I want to state two very interesting facts, just to stress the point. For many years, ever since, I think, the Knesset of 1980, traditionally, the parties, the anti-religious parties, had at least 20 mandates. Every Knesset, it was Shinui, Meretz, Mapam, Tzomet, name it. The recent elections that took place 3.5 years ago, it was the first time that the only party that still claims, well, not really, but maybe, that it's anti-religious, which is Meretz, got only 3 mandates. That's it. There's no other anti-religious party. Even Meretz itself is in a different place today. I'll share with you a story. We are, both me and Pnina, are in close touch with the leader of Meretz in Ranana. We have joint meetings, discuss cooperation between the Tiim and non-religious. And in one of the recent meetings, she spoke with me. She spoke to me with crying eyes. She told me, "We are not anti-religious. We are looking for spirituality exactly like what you can present, like what you can represent. It's not against the religion, it's against people that are taking advantage of the religion." And we'll touch upon this later on. There's no anti anymore. It's vanished, it's gone. There's 3 months ago, there's a survey which was done by the Gutman Institute about the religiosity of the Israeli society. According to this survey, today 80% of the Israelis believe in God, believe in Torah. 80%. It is amazing, incredible. It was never, ever the situation. Because the new generation that did not grow with tradition, did not see anything in the parents of their, in the home of their parents, grandparents, they're craving to learn, to see something which is for them the unknown. You can see it all over. The conversation in the country has changed. You hear it before the Chagim, in the media, in the radio, in the television. So many celebs are starting to, not necessarily Chozer B'Tshuva, but observing some of the mitzvot, observing Shabbat, and they are speaking about this proudly. It became very trendy to become traditional. There are many places for Limud Torah for secular people. Something we never had. In many kibbutzim, there are Kabbalot Shabbat, every Shabbat. They don't practice this in an orthodox way. But it came from within. It's not something which is organized by any reform movement. It's something that came from the people. There's a kind of awakening. In Tel Aviv, it's one of my favorite places today. On one hand, it's a very secular city. At the very same time, people are looking for spirituality. The young, secular students are looking for tradition, for Torah. I had the chance to give many shiurim there. It's just amazing to see the thirst. There's a shul. It was an empty shul. Just 10, 15 people on Shabbat. I sent...
Mention where it was. I'm sorry, I did not interfere until now. I was a good girl. But on Frischman Street, 100 years old...
Street, in the center of...
Center of Tel Aviv.
Of the happening of Tel Aviv. So we had in Tzohar a project of training and placing Rabbi Nekilot. I was in charge of the project. I sent a rabbi, originally American, to that shul. He has now, and I really recommend if you spend Shabbat in Tel Aviv, you should go to that shul. Every Friday night, 400 people, youngsters,
not religious.
Not, most of them, vast majority, not religious, boys and girls, dancing with Karlbach music. Obviously, Karlbach Kabbalah Shabbat, not music, sorry. By the way, there is also in Tel Aviv, in the port of Tel Aviv, in the Mal, in the summer, they're doing mass Kabbalot Shabbat. Again, it's not Orthodox, but thousands of people are coming to this. People are craving for spirituality. This is what is happening today with the non-religious society. Obviously, we cannot generalize. Not all of them. Here and there, you can find some anti-religious statements or actions, provocations. But in general, this is what is happening. We see it in the shuls. You see many people starting to come to shuls. Families celebrating bar mitzvah, non-religious, and want to come again. And coming again, there's something special in the air. Rav Kook, 90 years ago, wrote and maybe envisioned this process, which is exactly the process of the Chametz and Matzah after years of separation, which maybe is required in order to build something new. Then we reach a process of integration. That's the Chametz and Matzah, Pesach and Shavuot. Shari b'firuda v'sam b'chibura, we begin with separation. We are moving towards integration. That's supposed to be the highest level. So I just want to share with you a short quotation of Rav Kook, which is amazing, especially in light of our times, to see these uplifting words. Says Rav Kook the following. Mekubalim anu, we have a tradition that there will be a spiritual rebellion in the state of Israel, in the land of Israel, when the redemption will start. Says Rav Kook, at some point, people will feel that they fulfilled and accomplished the goal of the state, of establishing the state, what we called post-Zionism. And therefore, the spirit will sink and there will not be any aspiration to any lofty ideals, won't be any motivation, everything will apparently will sink. Till, says Rav Kook, there'll come a storm and a spiritual revolution will occur. And people will start realizing that the truth can be found within the light of Hashem. This is exactly what we see in our times. Because of all the deteriorations that we have experienced in the past years. In the past, there were strong Zionistic ideas and motivation within the non-religious society. It's hard to see this anymore. You don't have the same fervor, the same passion within the non-religious segment to Zionism, to the state of Israel, as it was in the past. It's not the same. It's part of the general wave in the world of postmodernism. But because of that, all of a sudden there's room to fill the emptiness with something else, with spirit, with spirituality. And this is exactly what is happening. By the way, the postmodern world, this phenomena in the entire world is making people more open-minded to spirituality through the tradition, because it's not black and white. You can still be who you are and try out something else, something new, something you never have experienced. And in a sense, this is what we see today. Because people are not so passionate about Zionism, about the state of Israel. It's not the same Zionism that we had in the state in 1948, in 1967, not even in 1980. It's different. But because of that, there's much more room for spirit, for spirituality, for tradition. This is, in general, the reflection of what is happening in the general society. 80% today believe in God and believe in Torah. 80% of the Jewish population in Israel. But there's one big but, which Nina will be speaking about. Only, according to the survey, only 30% are practicing Judaism. There are 50% of the Israeli society which we are missing out on. They want Torah. They want more spirit. They want more Judaism. They want stronger Jewish identity. But maybe for some reason they still do not find it within the existing frameworks. The Chametz wants to be sanctified, wants to come closer to the altar, but still looking for the way, and the way is still not accessible. This is mainly, there are many reasons for that, but mainly because things and challenges which the Dati society, the religious society is facing, and maybe I'll move this on to you, Pnina, to discuss.
If you're standing, that means that I should stand. Okay, I'm going to be standing. I have to say, I'm sitting here, and I, surprisingly enough, agree with almost everything you said. But it sounds too optimistic, and I hate to spoil the party, and I have to say, in a sense, this is basically what differentiates also in our marriage life. You're,
by the way, she's always the party killer. That's why we decided she'll do the second part.
I balance, you know, because you're the ultimate optimist, but I have to be slightly pessimistic. And I'm not pessimistic, but I do want to reflect the other side of the coin and to talk about the struggles and the challenges. I sometimes say to Ronen, we have these disputes, ongoing disputes. When I drive my car sometimes on my way to work, when I'm picking up the children, and I'm listening to the news, and as you know, in Israel, listening to the news is, you know, the thing we know to do. Every 30 minutes, we must listen to the news because things change rapidly in Israel. I listen to the news, and I sometimes say to myself, if I'm just able to shed and disregard for a minute my upbringing, my background, my religion, the house that I grew up in, the marriage life that I hold, if I could just detach myself from this and objectively listen to the news, would I like to be a part of Judaism the way it is presented by the media in Israel? And the answer is chad mashma'it, not even a question about that. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. It sounds outrageous. I know that this is not a chidush to many of you. You've heard things that went on in Israel, whether it may be separate buses or women singing, God forbid. I'm not getting into the halachic discussion. I'm just saying, if you're a non-religious, liberal person, the average person, and yes, you are fond of tradition, and yes, you want to be in touch with your heritage and Jewish history, but this is not what seems to be appealing. And obviously it sets its tone. Meaning if the Goodman Institute provides for the data that you have provided us, that 80% believe in Hashem. 80% believe in Hashem, but at the very same time less than 30% practice Judaism at any level, that by itself is an indication that we have a serious problem, and I fear that this serious problem is becoming even more and more severe as time progresses. And this may have also been, this not may, this was one of the reasons for the establishment of Beit Hillel, which I will relate to later on. Let's explain the following. There are many reasons to this phenomenon and to the fact that people are intrigued by Judaism but do not identify themselves as even traditional. They don't want to be a part of that because they're intimidated by it, or even not necessarily intimidated. They feel apathetic towards it. One of the reasons has to do with the role of religious Zionism. In the past, it was very easy. It was very clear. 30, 40 years ago, when I was born, here you know my age, when I was born, it was very clear in Israel. There were three sectors. There was the religious sector, Haredi sector. There was the Chiloni sector. And there was the Dati Lumi, the religious Zionist sector. And many people viewed that sector, Bnei Akiva, right, as a bridge between different sectors in society. This was a sector that I'm not sure, and I'm not convinced that the term modern orthodoxy applies, and I know many books have been written about the connection between religious Zionism and modern orthodoxy, but we'll talk about this. Most of the religious Zionist sector believed in modern orthodox values, practiced those values, Torah v'avodah, Torah umadah, and this was the practical bridge between different segments of Israeli society. But something has changed. Something has changed, and the change had occurred very gradually, but I have to say that the past 10 years, I'll even be more specific, the past 5, even 3 years, have been a tremendous eye-opener. And the last year, in the past few months, what we have been experiencing in Israel is a new phenomenon that is now setting its tone and that we must provide an answer to. In order to describe this phenomenon, whenever I talk about this, it reminds me of a midrash, a very famous midrash, that appears in the Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit and shares the story of Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's kind of popular because we're getting there towards Lag BaOmer. So let's talk about the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, for a second. The Midrash says that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon once came out of the yeshiva of his rabbi. The yeshiva of his rabbi was located up in the north, in the Galilee, in Israel, in a place called Migdal Gadol. Migdal, in Hebrew, is also a tower. Gadol is a fence. And you get the point. It's like an ivory tower. He was getting out of the yeshiva. He was riding his donkey next to the river, most probably the Kinneret. And he had great joy in his heart because he learned so much Torah. All of a sudden, he encounters a person. And that person has to be, apparently, is extremely ugly. And the person comes to Rabbi Elazar, who was a very outstanding scholarly figure, and he greets him. He says to him, Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. But instead of greeting that person, Rabbi Elazar is appalled by his ugliness, and he says to him, Reka, Kama Mecho'arincha, oh, you're an empty vessel, how ugly are you? Shema kol bnei ircha mecho'arim kamocha. Maybe all the people in your town are as ugly as you are. Yeah, this is, quite a deduction here. You see one ugly person, you already assume that all the people in his town are as ugly as he is. By the way, the version in the Yerushalmi of this story is even more extreme. When Rabbi Elazar sees this person, he says to him, how ugly are you? How ugly are all the sons of Avraham Avinu? As in Hebrew you say, nischafnu. It's too much. What does he mean by saying such a thing to this person who simply came and greeted him and said hello to him? The person is extremely offended. And to make a long story short, eventually Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon has to apologize. And I'm not going to get into the final stages of this story. But I would like to explain the phenomena. What went on there? What was Rabbi Elazar thinking? Why did he talk to this person this way? Well, we see an ugly person in the street, we have to tell him that he's ugly? Well, obviously, in Midrashei Chazal, ugliness is not necessarily physical. Rabbi Elazar comes from the yeshivish world, and for him, he saw angels and spirituality, and he learned Torah like there's no tomorrow. And all of a sudden, he comes and encounters an average, pragmatic person who works for his living, wakes up in the morning, drives his car to work, attends to his children, no time to learn Torah. Reka kama mecho'arincha. Now it's amazing. The ugly person approached Rabbi Elazar. He wanted to be in touch with Rabbi Elazar. He said to him, Shalom Alecha Rabbi Umori. But Rabbi Elazar, instead of embracing that person, instead of uplifting this person, says to him, Greka, you are an empty vessel, and all the members in your town are empty vessels like you are. Why does this relate to the situation that we are dealing with in Israel? It must be said. And in this sense, Israel is different than communities in North America and in somewhere in Europe, but definitely different from North America. When we're talking about rabbinical leadership in North America, it's very obvious that there are the rabbeim who are the Rosh Yeshivot, the heads of the yeshiva. And that is the goal by itself. Aside from that, there are community rabbis who are more in touch with the balibatim, with the people who basically bring Torah to the field, to the people. In Israel, the concept of community rabbis was almost non-existent until about 20 years ago. Of course, there were shuls with rabbis in them, not even a question. But the role of a community rabbi as a spiritual leader and not just as a provider of shiurim and a good address if you have a halachic question, that was missing. That was absent. And that set a tone. Because what happened was that rabbinical leadership to the religious Zionist sector in Israel is the Rashi Yeshivot. That is the rabbinical leadership. Where are most of the leaders, the spiritual leaders of the religious Zionism? You can interrupt whenever you want. Where are they situated? Mostly, most of yeshivot in the peripheral areas of Eretz Israel, whether it may be Yehuda, Shomron, Ramat Golan, not in the center, not in Gush Dan, not in Haifa. And that was very obvious and apparent because the Torah that came, and I'm not just talking about...
It's important to mention that all of them are great Talmidei Chachamim.
Of course, must be said. Of course, this is not even a question. Great Talmidei Chachamim. But the Torah that came from the Batei Midrash of many yeshivot is a very specific tone that does not necessarily comply with the modern Orthodox message. In Hebrew, in Israel, now they call it Chardal. Chardal stands for Charedi Leumi. Now, statistics show that of the 100% Dati Leumi sector, pretty much around 20-25% of the people are affiliated with what is called the Chardal sector. And the rest are more modern Orthodox. But there is no apparent, definitely not dominant spiritual leadership to the modern Orthodox sector, which is the silent majority. And the clear rabbinical voice that's being heard is the message of the Chardal. It's very obvious that many of the Roshei Hesder Yeshivot in Israel are not affiliated with Chardal and their messages are different. But at the very same time, the dominant voice that's being heard, if you open the newspapers, even the ones that are sectorial, if you listen to the news, the dominant voice that's being heard is a Chardal a message. Now, what do I mean by Chardal? I would like to provide a few examples for that. But before I get into that, just one more thing. What happened in the past 10 or 15 years is that message, the Chardali message, which is not at all modern Orthodox, that message became very dominant, not just in the yeshivish world, but also in a lot of education institutions, and I'm talking about Mamlachti Dati. I'm talking about the public schools that are Mamlachti Dati in Israel. And the reason for that is very simple. When I was growing up in Israel, right, and I grew up in a house that's modern Orthodox, it was very apparent and obvious to me that if there's one thing I'm not going to learn when I go to the college or university is education. I should be a lawyer, I should be a doctor, I should be an engineer, God forbid, not a teacher. Whereas in the Chardali sector, this is the mission. And Baruch Hashem, I mean, it's very impressive to see. This was the mission, to go into education, both the men and the women. Now, statistically, many of the teachers in the Mamlachti Dati school systems are affiliated with Chardal Ashkafa and not necessarily with the modern Orthodox Ashkafa. That's one element. Another element is the concept of Gar'inim Toranim. I trust many of you have heard about this. Many people with a clear vision, it must be said, it's all out of pure, genuine sense of a mission. It is done for the
with
right
great devotion.
People passionately believe in this. It's all done of truly authentic ideals. I'm not even questioning it. I'm just portraying what came out. In over 50 towns in Israel, young, vibrant families that are stemming from this Chardali movement are settling in the centers of the town. Now, it's very clear, you know, 30, 40, 50 families with young children, many young children, they go to the local Mamlakhti Dati school and they say, we're going to bring you our children who are great, come with great education, but now you have to meet our terms. Which means that many of the schools are changing. I would like to provide a few examples just for people to understand what the difference between Chardal and modern Orthodox is. And again, it's obviously two legitimate hashkafot olam. But the question is, what is going to be the future of modern Orthodoxy in Israel under these conditions? Let's provide a few examples. One example. A week ago, we got a phone call from a community in Givat Ze'ev. If people know where Givat Ze'ev is located, it's one of the suburbs of Yerushalayim. This is a fine community, people who are very learned, passionate about their Torah. They have a Gerim Torani. They called us after the establishment of Bet Hillel. I didn't even talk about Bet Hillel yet, but they asked for our assistance. Why do they need our assistance? There is a Gerim Torani in Givat Ze'ev, and it's very dominant in the school. The school is separate, boys and girls, but now there's going to be a celebration of Yom HaAtzmaut next Thursday. And in that celebration, the school is doing daglanut, right? You know, dancing with the dgalim. Daglanut is done by the fifth grade, right? The decision was passed by the board of the school, dominated by Chardal, that the fifth grade girls, age 11, cannot do daglanut because it's not tsanua. That's an issue. I'll provide another example. Last night, I was invited to be speaking at the party, graduation party of the Matan Bat Mitzvah program. I said to Rabbi Kelman, how natural and beautiful and normal was this? There were six or seven girls that were graduating along with their families, sitting together, having a meal, hearing the girls say Edval Torah. In many Mamlakhti Dati schools, fathers and grandfathers and brothers are not allowed to join such graduation parties. Not even if the girls are dancing or singing, even if the girl is standing and reciting a Dval Torah, it's not tsanua. Another example, Ramat Aviv. You know where Ramat Aviv is. A Gerim Torani in Ramat Aviv. The school, the Mamlakhti Dati school in Ramat Aviv, a separate school, but there's also separate transportation. The boys on one bus and the girls are another bus. I'm talking Mamlakhti Dati, Kipa Smuga. I provide another example from a different talk, and I'm sorry to be a party killer, and people can agree or disagree with me, but I'm asking again what the future of religious Zionism is about, and I need to present those examples, and please stop me if you think I'm overdoing it.
Just important to reemphasize that these people, they are not bad people. They are,
no, it's not even a question.
They are good people, pure intentions, it's the Shem Shamayim, but
not even a question.
It is something different that the society is not ready to digest.
Okay, let's continue with another example. This is an example that happened in our home, 4 weeks ago? Our daughter goes to Amana. She's 15 years old. She goes to Ulpana Amana. If any of you know Ulpana Amana in Kfar Saba, very center Ulpana of Merkaz Yeshivot Na'akiva. And there was a chidon, there was a big chidon in Halacha that she was learning to, and we thought it was wonderful. And one Shabbos, she comes home with a friend, all Shabbos long, they're sitting in their room studying Halacha. Motzei Shabbos, we sit with them, we want to see what they learned, how they're ready for the chidon. We knew that they were learning Pnine Halacha, the book Pnine Halacha, which is the wonderful halachic book of Rav Melamed. But when we asked them on Motzei Shabbos which of the volumes of Pnine Halacha were they learning, Hilchot Shabbat, Hilchot Brachot, numerous possibilities at the age of 15, we realized that the volume that she was learning was the volume Ha'am V'Ha'aretz. Ha'am V'Ha'aretz is a political volume. It's a political volume which addresses issues like Seruf Kuda, meaning whether a soldier must adhere to the commandment of the army in case of evacuation of villages. Now, this is a question that obviously has halachic implications. Not even a question. But there's no single voice in halacha about this. And for a 15-year-old girl to be learning this from a book and to take this as clear black and white message, just like you do Eruy Mikli Shlishi, if you make tea on Shabbos, you must do Seruf Kuda, it's a problematic message. Sunday, our daughter calls Ronen up and says, we've been learning in this book that the courts in Israel are Alka'ot Goyim. So how can mommy, this is me, be a lawyer? Now again, this is a challenging issue to be facing. And this was initiated by Merkaz Yeshivot Bnei Akiva. We call the head of Merkaz Yeshivot Bnei Akiva, Elchanan Glat, I trust many of you know who he is, he's an outstanding guy. He was not aware that the volume that is being studied is Ha'am v'ha'aret. He thought, Spina Alcha, like we thought, Ilchot Shabbat. What does that mean? Within the Chinuch Mamlachti Dati, within the Chemed, again, very strong, very vocal elements that express the ideology of Chardal. Now,
can I add something?
Sure.
Sorry.
I'm sorry to be a devil's advocate, but try and beautify the picture.
I just want to add something, something small. At least for me, it was one of the turning points this year when I made some of my decisions.
Oh, you're not beautifying the picture, I see.
Which picture?
No.
No, it's not about the picture. The midrash that Nina quoted before about Rabbi Lazar ends up with the conclusion of Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Lazar says, "Lo'olam ya'adam rach ka'kane v'al yikashe ka'erez." A person should always be soft like a reed and never be strong like a cedar. Kashe ka'erez. Says the Maharal, what's the difference between a cedar and a reed? A cedar, the more it grows, the more it becomes detached from the ground. The reed, the more it grows, the more it bends down to earth, to the ground. Says the Maharal, this is the indication of a true Talmid Chacham, that the more he grows, the more he's able to connect to the society, not to be detached from the society. There are many issues happening in Israel this year. The issues of Adarat Nashim, exclusion of women, or the refusal, the statement that made by one of these rabbis about a fire squad, that it's better not to hear Shriat Nashim and even be killed by a fire squad because it's such a... Obviously, there's no halachic ground for this. There was a story of Michtav Rabbanim, letters of Rabbanim supporting Katzav, the president, against the courts, many things that most of them did not come from the Haredi community. The story of Beit Shemesh that everybody heard about came from the Haredi community. But most of them took place within the religious Zionist community. Most of the stories that were in the press, in the news. And one of the things that for me was shocking was a statement that made by some of, again, very great Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshivot. And they came to the chief of staff of the army, the Ramatkal, and they told him that if the issue of Shirat Nashim, of women, singing of women, will not be solved in the army, that these soldiers will not be able to go anymore to the army. For me, it was a shocking message. I personally served 6 years in the army in the special units of the Navy. I was the only Dati soldier. There are many other, trust me, much bigger challenges than Shirat Nashim. Will that be the thing which will split the society? Shirat Nashim, is that the essence of the Torah? When I was in the army, when I came, I served in the Navy. So the first week, I joined the crew, the team of the ship, one of the ships of the Navy. And again, as I said before, I was the only Dati soldier. There was no kosher food in that ship. And I had two options. One option is to go to the rabbinut of the local base, and obviously they could be cashering the sheep and maybe filing something against the commander, because by the laws of the army everything must be kosher. But I decided I don't want to make a noise. I can give up and I can manage with eating only vegetables. And this is what I did for almost a week. I was very friendly with everyone. Did not try to impose any single thing. It was a small team of about 20 soldiers. And every time we ate together, breakfast, lunch, dinner, I ate only vegetables and bread. At some point, not more than a week, they came over to me and asking me to kasher the boat, to kasher the ship, the kitchen of the ship. They wanted to do it together with me. They wanted me to give them instructions. And ever since, every time they had a shy-like question, they came to me and asked me. It was strictly kosher. Without doing one single noise. You know what's the problem nowadays? It's interesting. Everything is upside down. In the past, it was a conversation of duties. What are my duties? What are my rights? Obviously, I have rights. But I thought about my duties. Today, it became a conversation about rights. What are my rights as a soldier? Instead of seeking for integration, some people are looking to create friction and tension. And it's such an absurd. In time, if I'm going back to the chametz and the matzah, in times that the chametz want to get closer to the matzah is trying to turn him away. That's the absurd. Continue.
Thank you for... Listen, it must be stressed. We've been around in the United States and Canada and Europe. And maybe there are slight variations. But some of the challenges that we're facing now in Israel, I think, are not local, but rather international. And in many senses relate also to local communities, definitely Northern America. But the question is, again, what do you do about this? Because on one hand, there's a thirst, there's a need. There are 80% who would like to get closer to their Judaism, and it's apparent, it's accessible, it's just obvious. At the very same time, it's very challenging when some of the spiritual leadership of religious Zionism is trying to prevent that from happening. Not trying, to the contrary. The concept of Kiruv exists. But when the message is very, very extreme and many people cannot relate to it at any level, that creates a path, apathy, to its best, animosity in the worst case. How do you resolve that? I'd like to say that the way I view this, there are basically two challenges. It's not just me. There are basically two challenges that currently the Israeli society is facing when it comes to, again, the catering of religious services and, again, the accessibility of Judaism. It will not be a chidush to any of you that today the Rabbanut Rashit in Israel is dominated by the Haredi sector. In that sense, you know, you would think that if a Chiloni person, if a non-religious person, when does he or she encounter the Jewish world? When it comes to the Jewish cycle of life, right? Brit Milah, marriage, God forbid, death. This is when we encounter, but then when the services that are being catered are provided by Haredi rabbeim, obviously that does not necessarily cater to the needs of those who are looking for a different type of Judaism. That's one challenge. Another challenge, again, as we have talked about, is the way Judaism is being perceived. And the concept of modern orthodoxy, which is not heard, definitely not over the media, definitely not on a daily basis, that's not the message. And that's another challenge that must be addressed. Those challenges must be addressed, and I would like to refer to some solutions that are now very, very successful in Israel, some in very developed stages of activity, some just beginning. On one hand, Sohar organization, which Rabbi Kalman had mentioned before, which was founded around the death of Yitzhak Rabin. Their goal of Torah organization is to focus on making the Rabbanut, or controlling the Rabbanut, or penetrating into the Rabbanut, up to a point that it will not longer be dominated solely by Haredi elements. That by itself is a big challenge. But that is not enough. We need to provide an educational message that will address the diminishing power of modern Orthodoxy. Because nowadays, I always say this, the average 17 or 16-year-old kid who grows up in a modern Orthodox home in Israel and obviously has all the passion in the world and wants to be as close to Hashem as he or she can, for the average kid, the perception is that if you want to be authentically religious, you need to be at least chardal. Modern Orthodoxy, that's bedieved, that's pshara. It's a compromise. How do you educate to modern Orthodox values? And that to us is a great challenge. And it requires a lot of work. Around Hanukkah time, when the whole concept of Shirat Nashim became very, very, very dominant in the news, a group of rabbis, I would say 10 people, got together and realized that there is a need for, again, education to modern Orthodox values. That group of people started off calling peers, friends, rabbis, mostly rabbis of communities, dominant spiritual leaders in their communities, and it was amazing because within a month, there was a turnout of over 150 rabbis to join and make such a change. Must be said that this organization, we don't call it an organization, we call it a movement called Bet Hillel. Most of the rabbis in Bet Hillel, including Ronen, are affiliated with Zohar, but at the very same time, again, these are two equivalent spheres. They don't contradict each other, but rather complement each other. Of the 150 members of Bet Hillel, I would say that 120 members are men, rabbeim, and 30 members are women who have been elected selectively as spiritual, prominent spiritual leaders in Israeli society. The idea was that for the first time, it is of essence to create cooperation between spiritual leaders to enhance the message of religious Zionism as modern Orthodox society. Do you want to elaborate on that? Do you want to talk about that for a second? Okay, I would say that the three main challenges that now we need to address are issues of education, democratic values, and enhancement of women's status. Let's talk about education for a second. It was trivial 10 or 15 years ago that the average Dati Lumi child learns what we call Torah Umada, Torah and Avodah, and obviously there should be room for secular studies. Now there are a few, at least elementary schools and some high schools in Israel, affiliated with religious Zionism, Kippah Sruga, that there is no learning of secular studies, or very minimal learning of secular studies. In some yeshivot, the message to the Talmidim is that, you know, if you really have no choice and you must acquire a profession, go and learn and have a degree. But that is bidiyavad. Ideally, one must not enter a university or a college and must not acquire academic study. There's a need to educate for the learning of what academic values are and how they comply and complement our Jewish education. That's one thing. Another thing is, again, acceptance of democratic values. It sounds almost trivial, almost elementary. The respect to the court, the respect to the laws of the State of Israel. I had an argument over the course of the Shabbat when we stayed in Tinek. We met with Professor Brechiyahu Lifshitz, who used to be my dean in Hebrew University when I took my bachelor's degree, when I had my bachelor's degree. And he said it's legitimate to criticize the rulings of the court in Israel. Not even a question. It's always legitimate to criticize, but not to undermine the validity of the court in Israel, or of the government in Israel, whether you agree with the actions of the government or disagree. That does not mean that we go like a herd and follow whatever we're being told. That's not democratic. But it means that you have respect for the institution. The concept mamlachti, which in the past was what defined religious Zionism, is in question, is in danger. And these values must be enhanced. And, as I was mentioning, enhancement of women. The religious Zionist sector is now at a junction. And the status of women, that is a question that must be defined. Talking about the fact that women should exercise their Judaism and have free rights, equal rights, is a message that needs to be defined. How do you do it within the sphere of religious life? That is something that must be answered. Now, obviously, a lot of halachic questions arise. For example, I know that many of you are acquainted with what they call shoot, virtual shoot, people SMS the rabbi a question, can I do this or that? And the rabbi answers with yes or no answers, SMSs back. Where was Hashem in the Holocaust? And the rabbi answers with one sentence, we're not looking for such kind of ideology. There's a need and a thirst for a very clear halachic and spiritual leadership and guidance to the vast majority of the religious Zionist sector who's looking for spiritual guidance. Can fathers come to a party when their 12-year-old girls are performing? Yes or no? There's a need for a halachic answer. Today, you do not find such shutim that are providing such answers, and this is the need.
If I can just try and summarize. As we began, there's a great opportunity more than ever in the state of Israel today with the general society. In a sense, we feel the footsteps of Mashiach, what Rav Soloveitchik defines as kol dodid ofek, that God is knocking on our door, and He tells us it's time for redemption. People want to come closer to Hashem, want to come closer to the Torah. It is something which is very noticeable, which is even easy to prove. At the very same time, there are many challenges within the religious Zionist sector that can serve as the bridge, as the movement that can bring it at the end of the day, the Torah to the entire people, to the entire Am Yisrael, and to bring us to the next level of the rebuilding of the state of Israel. There are many challenges, as we have described, within the society, but yet there are also many forces, but two major forces that are working in this direction to amend the problems. It's Zohar and Beit Hillel, to correct this religious establishment and to work on a social change within the society, which will have an impact in the end of the day on the general society. I wish to conclude this presentation with sharing with you two midrashim, and afterwards we'll open this up to questions. There's a midrash in Tana Deve Eliyahu, and the Midrash is referring to one of the most horrible times in our history, the story of Pilegesh Bagiva, civil war in which 70,000 Jews were killed. And the Midrash is trying to investigate whose fault is it. And I'm quoting the Midrash. Shema Tomar, אותם 70,000, these 70,000 people, שנרגו בגבעת בני בנימין, מפני מה נרגו, what is the reason? Says the Midrash, היה להם, it was the obligation, the duty of the Sanhedrin, שהניח משה ויהושע ופנחס, שקשרו חבלים של ברזל במותניהם, והגביאו בגדיהם. They had to get out of their comfort zone and start traveling across Israel. ויחזרו בכל עירות ישראל to walk from town to town. יום אחד בבית אל, one day in בית אל, יום אחד לחברון, יום אחד לירושלים, וילמדו את ישראל דרך ארץ. They had to go and connect to the people. That was the role of the spiritual leadership. As we said before, with the reed, they had to connect to the people. Achem lo asuken, but they did not do so. Ela kshenichnasu la'atzam, when we entered the land, kol echad ve'echad nichnas lecharmo ve'le'eno ve'lesadeo, each one went to his vineyard and field and home and took care of his own family and settlement and people instead of seeing the big picture of Am Yisrael. Kedei lo la'arbot aleihem ta'torach, in order to not making it this too challenging. וכשעשו בגבעת בני בנימין דברים מכוערים, and all this ugly story took place in גבעת בנימין, Hashem wanted to destroy the world. And the Midrash is concluding, whose fault is it? לכך נתקבצו ויצאו למלחמה ונרגו 70,000, there was a war, 70,000 people were killed. Who to blame? ומי הרג את כל אלה? Says the Midrash, לא הרג אותן, אלא סנהדרין גדולה, שהניח משה ויהושע פנחס בן אלעזר. It's the fault of the people of the Sanhedrin. They had to serve as a relevant, tolerant, spiritual leadership, but they have not. They had good intentions, great people, but they missed out on this opportunity. This is exactly the challenge. People in all these places, in Tel Aviv, Yerushalayim, Ranana, Haifa, Petach Tikva, they want spirit, they want Torah, they want religion. Will we be able to serve as a spiritual leadership to bring it to them in a way they can take it, in a way that's going to uplift them? This is a major question. This is responsibility. This is maybe the cheshbon nefesh for our times. Do you want to add the second midrash?
Yeah, just very briefly, the other, I would say, side of the coin is the story of Elkanah and his family, Elkanah and Hannah and Penina, which the Midrash portrays how they went on Aliyah before Har HaBayit to the Mishkan, which was in Shiloh, every year taking a different path, settling in a different town. And the Midrash says, "V'hayu lanim birchova shel ir." They would sleep in the streets of the town, and people would come and say to them, "Why are you here?" And they would say, "We're going to uplift ourselves. We're going to the Mishkan. Why won't you join us?" And when people heard them, and when people saw that the people who are going to the Mishkan, Elkanah and his family are going hand in hand with them, the Midrash says their eyes filled with tears and they said, "Yes, we're going with you." And this is how they passed through all the towns in Israel and said, "We're going to be standing in the center of the town, sleeping in the center of the town until everyone goes with us." And the Midrash is ending that they didn't end doing so, "Ad shehayu olim kulam," until everyone in Israel went to the Mishkan. And I think that the role of spiritual leadership in Israel today is exactly that message, the message of Elkanah. Ad sheyu olim kulam. There's so much thirst, there's so much craving, there's so much goodness going on in Israeli society. Baruch Hashem, we've been blessed so much, 65 years of goodness provided to us from above. Such a great miracle. We must enhance that miracle. We must make the best of this miracle. We cannot rest and we cannot settle down and we cannot eliminate some segments of society. We have to walk hand in hand. Ad sheyu olim kulam. We'd love to hear some questions.
So I guess I'll start the ball rolling, Penina. Thank you, both of you. And I'll avoid editorializing. So the question, the elephant in the room that neither of you mentioned is the political dimension that led to the dynamic that's now present. You know, it's sort of like follow the money. As you well know, the Haredi-ization of the rabbinical establishment in Israel has an inherent political dimension. And until that is somehow dealt with, it seems to me that your wonderful and proud sentiments of Beit Hillel and Zohar are going to still fall on somewhat deaf ears. So I'd like you to address, if you could, Degel HaTorah, Shas, Aguda, the social, the political dynamic that drives this Haredization, which, you know, undermined Yuval Neiman and his efforts that began something that then got gone. The Neiman Commission, which was the beginning, if you think intellectually, of where you are going, was undermined by this Haredization, which had its political antecedents. And neither of you mentioned that in the least. So I'd like you to hear your comments on that.
It's a big question.
Okay. First of all, it's a very good and important question. I would say two things. In the political game, Zohar became a very central player. I don't know if you are aware, but there was a big thing took place about 3 months ago when the Ministry of religion decided to close down the option for Zohar to do weddings. Zohar today is doing about 40% of the secular weddings in Israel. Everything is done for free. And the religious establishment, Ministry of Religion Affairs decided to close down this initiative of Zohar. So Zohar went out to the public. It's important to mention that the minister is from Shas. Zohar went out to the public. It didn't take more than 2 days till he had to turn his decision upside down because there was such an uproar and a protest that he didn't even imagine. Zohar is working in the political game with something that did not happen in the past, with the different parties, with the secular parties. There's now the Zohar bill, which is they are trying also to pass, and this is something that did not exist in the past. I'm not saying it will solve everything. It's a very difficult game, no question. But this is something which is dealt with. At the very same time, I think that today the Israeli society is in a different place. We saw it in the summer. There was a big protest. The Israeli society today is in a different place than where the politicians are. The political ground is one thing. It's one story. Again, we're not trying to diminish the importance. But there are unbelievable things which are happening within the society. There's an awakening. If we saw in the summer 400,000 people coming out from the comfort zone to protest for social justice, it says something about the society. And therefore, there's very significant role to the social changes that will happen, which has got nothing to do with politics. So, therefore, as we mentioned before, we're trying to work, there are forces working in these two directions. One of them in the political direction, the establishment, and that's what Zohar is doing in a very effective way. And the other one is the social change, which Beit Hillel is doing. And again, I'm not saying these are the only, there are others, but today, in terms of numbers, these are the biggest movements, organizations which are working in the field. So this is being addressed. Again, the political game, I'm re-emphasizing, it's more difficult, it's more challenging, but we had a success this year. We had a big success.
If I may add to this, definitely your comment is very much in place, and obviously there is room for amendment and growth in many fields, and obviously without appropriate political representation and a political answer, and you were mentioning the efforts of the Sarei Ne'eman and other such efforts, obviously there cannot be any success. At the very same time, by the way, being a daughter of a politician, but at the very same time...
The father of Nina, by the way, is the Minister of Science and Technology.
From the Beit Yehudi, but it was very important And the sounds that we have been representing today of the 600 rabbis affiliated with Tzohar and the 150 spiritual leaders affiliated with Beit Hillel, it must be said that there is a lot of political diversity amongst those who are representing organization and movement. And the idea is, again, to provide spiritual leadership and to detach ourselves from the political game, to be relevant in that sphere. But definitely, that is not enough. There is room for a lot of political action, and things are being done. I can say behind the scenes from what I see home. But that's that we're aiming to be apolitical as possible, not as a tactics, but rather this is our strategic, and this is why I think this is our source of strength. A lot of people who don't necessarily agree with each other agree on shared modern Orthodox values, lechatchila and not b'diavad.
Any other questions?
Okay, so I'm wondering whether the non-democratic or anti-democratic nature of the Chardal sector is receiving some impetus or additional converts because of a feeling of alienation by people from another power center, not the political power center, but by the power center centered in the media elites, academic elites, and the judicial elites.
Your comment is definitely in place. No question about this. No question about this. And you know, we could be sitting here all night exploring what are the roots of this agenda. And definitely, it's very clear that a lot of animosity has been created because you cannot trust the Israeli media, and there's a definite leftist message that is also sometimes anti-religious. It's very interesting because the media itself may be anti-religious, but as was prevented, and as again we see from the results of the study of the Guttmann Institute, the majority of the public is not at all anti-religious, so the media is not necessarily representing the public. And so you see that challenge. There's also the challenge of, as we know, the Supreme Court and the rulings of the Supreme Court, which have created a lot of anger and frustration. By the way, being in the academic world and stemming from the law faculty, I too have a lot of criticism over what goes on. Many times I hear this when I talk to people who say to me, we don't want to be suckers anymore. We are standing for what's ours, and if no one else is going to attend to our rights, then we're going to attend to them. And it's a legitimate claim, and I'm not even arguing with a claim. By the way, this is not necessarily the sole reason for this necessarily anti-democratic message on behalf of some of, obviously also within the Chardali sector, it's very diverse and not necessarily, but I'm saying also the disengagement caused a lot of frustration. You know, we gave ourselves, we gave our best years to the Israeli army, to the country, and now the country is betraying us. So maybe our passion and our desire and the tefillah lishlom medina that we say on a weekly basis, maybe there's no room for that. So there's not even a question that there are many reasons for the frustration which led to this phenomena. At the very same time, and this is the message that we're trying to stress, we're not hiding and we're not trying to justify the behavior of the Israeli media or the story of the disengagement. Again, from an apolitical point of view, there was injustice done. I personally hold with right-wing views, I think it was more than injustice, but either way you look at it, there was injustice done. And I'm not even talking about the behavior towards the evacuees after the disengagement. So much room is there for criticism and for this feeling of loneliness and for this tendency to say, okay, if no one is going to attend to my needs, then I'm going to attend to the needs of my sector. But as was mentioned before, and you know, sometimes I say this to my children and they hate it when I say this to them, but from us as a sector, the religious Zionist sector, many people are looking at us and are expecting us to behave in an altruistic fashion, which does not just attend to the needs of our sector. I think this is what differentiates the Ashkafa between the Ashkafa of the Haredi sector, which is very self-oriented. Okay, we'll attend to our rights, to our education, to our children, to the promotion of our yeshivot, as opposed to the religious Zionist sector, who attends to Klal Yisrael. And this is our responsibility to Klal Yisrael. Do we pay a price because we're obsessed with Klal Yisrael and not just with ourselves? not a doubt. There's a price to it. At the very same time, I feel that there's also a price to alienation. But it's regardless. This is our responsibility. And this is the message that must be stressed. Unfortunately, it is not as trivial as it was 20 years ago.
Just to conclude, despite all the challenges and the hardships, the picture is optimistic. We are moving. We spoke about segments, we spoke about sectors, about disputes, about machlokot, but in the end of the day, we are in a track, in a path of unity. And that's the place where the majority of the Israeli society is going through. That's what the majority of the Israeli society is looking for. And this will happen. We just need to do the right things. The picture is optimistic. And on that note, I wish to conclude with a short Sfat Emet. It was written 121 years ago. Shnat Tafrish Mem Aleph. Sfat Emet writes this in Poland, in Gur. And he says, it was on Chanukah, that Knesset Israel has three festivals from the Torah: Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Observing these three festivals gave us the power and the strength to establish Chagim from the Torah Shebaal Peh. And each festival of the Torah Shebaal Peh is a reflection of one of the three festivals, says the Sfat Emet. And he continues, and he says, Chanukah, E'ara mi'chag ha'sukot. Chanukah is a reflection of Chag Sukkot. Both of them are 8 days. There are many connections. If you remember the story of the Shita of Bet Shammai, Pochet Ve'olech, that candles are, the number of candles is descending, which is equivalent to the bulls, sacrifices of Sukkot, also Pochet Ve'olech. By the way, in that year, they did not celebrate Sukkot, so Chanukah was in a sense a compensation. And Sfat Emet continues, Shavuot is a reflection of Purim. Sorry, Purim is a reflection of Shavuot. On Shavuot, we accepted the Torah. On Purim, we re-accepted the Torah. If you remember the Midrash, Shabbat, Peichet, Hadur kiblo bimeach ha-shorosh. We re-accepted the Torah since it said kimu v'kiblo yudim. Kimu v'kiblo is parallel to na'aseh v'nishma, to do and then to hear. And then says the Sfat Emet, again, 121 years ago. Ve'ata metzapim anu liot od shenemar ki meitzetcha me'eretz Mitzrayim arenu niflaot. Says the Sfat Emet, we have the third Chag, Pesach. It's our original Independence Day. We are now waiting for the third Chag of the Torah Shebaal Peh to be established, which will reflect our new redemption, the current redemption. In our times, we had the zchut, we had the merit to have to complete the series of Chagim, to establish the third Chag of the Torah Shebaal Peh, Yom Ha'atzmaut. And maybe Yom Ha'atzmaut is a reflection of the first Yom Tov, when we just left Egypt, we started our independence. In Shvi Shel Pesach, when the Egyptian died, and that was the end of the story, don't go back to Egypt. Maybe this gave the power to Yom Yerushalayim, which is the Makebe Patish of the State of Israel. We have the zchut, we have the merit to have these Chagim, holy Chagim. And what we did today was part of Cheshbon Nefesh. Like we do before Rosh Hashanah, we do kind of Cheshbon Nefesh, private Cheshbon Nefesh. We need to do a national Cheshbon Nefesh about the future of our nation, our state, our children. So we are very optimistic. Amazing things are happening in the State of Israel. But we just need to understand the picture from within. That is what we defined at the beginning. Tzipita Lishua. To watch. To observe. To try to realize. To understand. and to follow accordingly, to listen to Kol Dodi Dofek, to the voice of Hashem knocking on our doors and telling us, this is what you have to do, this is what we need to do.
Well, then, if I may just add one more word. You know,
he always says the final word. So.
Just one more word, and this I should end. It's very, you know, as I always debate with myself when I'm speaking abroad, whether it's appropriate to be speaking about the challenges of the state of Israel. It's as if, you know, I, the Israeli, am an ambassador of the Israeli state. And, you know, when you speak of the challenges, you portray Israel in a very specific light, and maybe this is not doing justice with Eretz Israel, and this is definitely not the role of this presentation. To the contrary, they always tell us, right, that if you're walking and the walk is easy, so you must be going down. If it's a challenge, so you must be climbing up a mountain. I feel that the challenges to the Israeli society are a reflection of the fact that it's the real thing. These are real challenges. The Baruch Hashem, for 2,000 years, our forefathers have been praying to be battling and confronting such challenges. And here we are coming from the land of plenty, Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash, and sharing with you our challenges. But one more thing, and with this I should really end. Why I think it is so important for us to be coming and sharing these reflections with you is because I don't think that there's any room for the differentiation between Jewry in Eretz Israel and Jewry abroad, including here in Toronto, Eir HaKodesh. It's a joint partnership, and the mission is one mission, and the role is one role. Ad she'ya'alu kulam, in the literal sense, but not just in the literal sense, also in the spiritual sense. And in this sense, I feel that when we understand the struggles and the challenges of each Jewish community in the United States and Canada and Europe, and the duvdevan shebekatzefet in Eretz Israel, that gives us a greater understanding of the sense of the mission and of our joint responsibility to make Eretz Israel even better, more thriving, more fruitful, and more successful than it is today. And I wish you all Chag Sameach.